Hi, I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lee Wijeskoog of Stuyvesant, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. This is Foraging Ahead. I'm Kevin Factor. Tonight, a rebroadcast of a conversation I had with Mary Stuart Masterson about this time last year. I took her and her kids out mushroom hunting, and she was kind and gracious enough to sit down and clean them with me as we prepared to dehydrate them. The conversation ranges from acting and parenting and Me Too to her amazing work in Kingston, New York, bringing film work upstate. She also shares her famous, now famous, coffee filter trick for rehydrating mushrooms. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll be with you live next month.
Here's a knife.
Ability to focus. Nice knife.
Yeah.
Awesome. This is a nice Japanese knife.
It is. You knew it. This is. I got the German one also, just because I'm a big fan of the Axis cutlery.
So you have a brush.
I got a brush. I'm just going to brush these a little bit. You see all these little holes?
Yeah.
So I should...
get in there?
You get in there, and those are all bugs.
Now I can really see.
But your kids were super.
So beautiful.
They were so... I really love taking kids out. Like, here.
Yeah, it was awesome.
They are, they're like...
It's also such a great, experience for them, you know? I mean, and Cleo is able to, she's a girl.
Well,
it's just a different time of life.
Like, they're smarter.
I don't know. But, you know, there's all that energy and...
I think both Wilder and Mosley were
at their incredible moments of focus.
Were on it, you know, and I like, you know, that moment where it's just like, oh, all I know is this little bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, and I know something now.
Yeah.
And then like all of a sudden,
and they don't
like,
want more than they can handle, you know.
Yeah. I sometimes, as my son will attest, I get a little bit excited and start talking about mycorrhizal relationships to 8-year-olds. And
you dip it, and I usually, I just, this is how I do it.
Yeah, however you want to do it. To be honest.
Get the dirt, but not get too much water.
I tend to not worry so much about getting all the dirt off. I think it's not too bad to eat. So this is side of Mary Stuart Masterson, the famous actress that most people don't get to hear about.
The food part?
The fungus side.
Yeah, I do love the mushrooms. I can't say I've the eating kind, the edible kind.
Oh yeah, no, don't worry. Nobody listens to my show. You'll be fine.
No, but actually.
Really?
Yeah. I'm boring that way.
Really?
So wait, now what this one...
That one, which I was... What is that? Yeah, that's fine.
You want to dehydrate?
Yeah. This one? Yeah.
But you're going to slice this
gonna,
sort of...
I'm going to cut it in half. And, you know. It's all right. Look at these. So meaty.
They're beautiful.
And so you have dehydrated mushrooms before.
Yeah. And I have rehydrated mushrooms before. My favorite trick is the paper coffee filter.
Oh, tell.
So, you know, just like any pour-over obsessed Brooklynite of coffee, I have a lot of different cones for drip coffee. You know, we've got the
I did not know that Chemex. Was a characteristic of Brooklynites.
Oh, it's Brooklyn. I guess it's Portland, Oregon.
Or that you consider yourself a Brooklynite.
I suppose, well, and not by your standards.
Well, I mean, my standards are old standards.
You know, by the standard of someone who grew up in Manhattan and moved to Brooklyn in 2006, I guess that doesn't count at all.
No.
Not at all.
No.
I only did 10 years. But
you did 10 years of Brooklyn.
But I grew up in... I did grow up in Manhattan, so I'm a New Yorker.
You are a New Yorker.
I'm a New Yorker.
But you don't have the accent.
Oh, God, no.
Did you ever have the accent?
My parents are both from the South.
Oh.
And so when you talk to them, you know, they both were actors and studied with the various method actor teachers out there. And one had to lose one's Southern accent.
Really?
So my father... would sit older than me, my sister Lexi, would be sat on his lap, and he would say, "How now, brown cow?"
Oh, really?
Yes. Proper diction.
Elocution.
Yes.
Yes.
And my sister already had a Southern accent, though she, too, was raised in New York City.
Huh.
How now, brown cow? And then pretty soon, I never had that.
You never had it.
Yeah. But I did have people at the schools that I went to, because my name is Mary.
Mary?
They would call me Mary.
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 Oh.
And then I would say, Mary Stuart? Because it's not hyphenated, my name.
Ah.
But it is Mary Stuart.
It's Mary
Stuart.
It's
a Southern name, so it's two words. But no hyphen.
Okay. Do you remember the name of these guys?
Old
man of the woods. These are...
they are beautiful.
Smell that. That is just the earth.
No, but there's a floral... There's a floral note there, too. Wow, that's gorgeous. Okay, so back... Okay, coffee filter.
I'm sorry. Yeah, right, so you're talking about the coffee filter.
Right, so you take the...
You have to keep me on track.
You take the cone,
uh-huh.
And you know the paper filter that you put in the cone? The triangular-looking thing? So, if you have dried mushrooms, you boil water, and instead of just, you pour the water over the mushrooms and let it sit for a few minutes until they rehydrate, and then you pour it through the filter, mushrooms and all, to get any last bit of soil out of it.
Oh.
And then you even squeeze the mushroom to get the lovely... last essence of the mushroom into that liquid.
Mm-hmm.
You don't put too much liquid because you want to reserve that liquid, and it's so good in a stock or it's good in a sauce, so that you don't lose that when you rehydrate them.
Oh.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That's
yes.
That's a wild trick.
Nice trick. Works well, especially for risotto or something like that.
Mm.
Oh gosh, this is beautiful.
Aren't they lovely?
Yeah. Which one is this one? This was
the
milk.
No, that's not a milk cap. No. I think you guys took off. This is a milk cap.
Oh, so
has gills. Has
oh,
gills
right, right, right. And this is spongy.
That's so, a spongy. That's a bolete.
Bolete.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So how many times have your listeners had the pleasure of hearing you talk about boletes and mushrooms and foraging? And
well, once... The show used to almost exclusively be like foraging, and
then all your spots got hit too hard. And you had to pull back.
And then I sort of I was seized with this panic at one point, and it was right when I think Hudson was doing. And I rail against this all the time, and people, the Ramp Festival.
Oh yes,
you know, and I'm like, this is not going to be sustainable.
Right.
And I am, you know, ironically, you promote something you love to do.
Yes.
And you simultaneously destroy your ability to do it.
Yes.
And I think it's very hip now. And
yeah, it is.
So.
That's why I did it today.
Well,
it's hip.
Because it's hip. I know.
As you can tell, I'm super hip.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Rolling up in the minivan.
Like, Phineas didn't look seem like he was paying attention. He takes stuff in.
Oh yeah, man. He
was
at the end.
It was like he was just.
At first, I was not interested, and then I was just. I found it very fascinating.
He's just kind of, he's totally paying attention. That was really cool. Yeah.
Has a tremendous memory.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he's a smart kid, Dad Phineas.
Well, I mean, apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I say. The apples don't necessarily have to fall close to each other, as my friend said.
They also roll.
And they roll.
That's what we hope for. Children are like at least 2.0, right? We're working for evolution, right?
Yeah.
So we're hoping that they're smarter than us and better than us in every way.
Do you find yourself like your model for parenting, which is... Like super, I should say. You know, your kid was having a bit of a meltdown in the forest, and fair enough. David was like, "Dad, it's like these little kids. We're out here like 90 minutes, and you're dragging them all over the forest."
Oh no, it was fine.
And you know, of course, they're gonna have a meltdown. And
sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't.
And you know, like with four, I mean, gosh, if you can't roll with it, you're doomed.
Yeah, it's true. In fact, that's a funny thing you mentioned, because the other day, Wilder didn't get his way, and he sat down and he went, I'm doomed.
Oh, no.
And I was like, where did you get that? You're doomed?
Doomed.
You're doomed.
That's great.
Because you didn't get one more piece of, I don't know, cornbread or something.
Right.
Not exactly doomed. You have it pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the end of the world, everything.
I know.
The end of the world.
It's hard. I think the hardest part is when you have four kids, and we have four kids that are very close in age.
Yeah.
The hardest part for us is to surrender our perfectionism and allow ourselves to not be great as parents. All the time, you know, I'm just be like, there's no way to meet everyone's needs.
No,
you have to surrender to trying your best and then being accountable for when you screw up. And give them as much as you can and let them make their own mistakes. Like, there are times where you're just like, I can't have hot eyes everywhere, and I can't keep them corralled and helicopter them to death. And they're gonna and I know there's
a very illiberal.
The blessings of a skin knee and all that idea. Like, it is very important for people to make their mistakes. What's funny is they play superhero games. They played superhero games before they watched any superhero media because they knew who the superheroes were.
Right.
It was like having a pantheon of gods.
Absolutely.
They'd be like, oh, this one has this power, that one has that. They don't have to watch it. They could play it and inhabit
it. It's almost archetypal.
Yeah, totally.
They are archetypal.
So it's like, fine.
Yeah.
You know? But they're going to do what they're going to do. And they come out so different. They come out who they are. It's like they're just. My example is I have twins, right. Boy, girl, twins.
Now that's Mosley.
That's Wilder and Cleo.
Oh, Wilder and Cleo, right?
Yet. I'm not Mosley.
Oh, I know. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I love how like honest they are. It doesn't matter. They don't care. They'll just let you know, and then fine.
I slipped this guy.
Wilder and Cleo were born 20 minutes apart, and Wilder, and both of them sort of. You know, in one in each arm, Wilder would always try to get his mouth on my mouth. It was like trying to kiss me as a swaddled. He was tiny. Uh-huh. And he just wanted to be held, and he wanted to be held all the time. And Cleo had this look on her face that was just like, we called her Stone Cold.
Is that
Stone
right?
Stone Cold Cleo, because she had this deadpan. She still can do it. And people think she's really quiet, but she's super observant. Mm. And they just came out exactly who they are, and they're exactly who they are. They're twins. They're, you know, gestated the same, nurtured the same, but they're completely, completely different personalities. And it's amazing. All four of them are so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Yeah. You've got a community. I mean, you have a culture. I mean,
we almost have a basketball team.
That's the thing with big families. It's, I mean, I always wanted, you know, like a big family because they always seem so much fun.
Did you have siblings?
I have a younger sister, uh-huh. But did your parents ever get divorced?
No,
they stayed together.
I know. Wow. They're in the show business, the business we called show.
Yeah,
and they're still married and they're still alive.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I mentioned they're Southern.
Is that right?
No, I think they're...
It's just the weight of history kept them together?
No. The war. No, my dad said at all of my weddings... No, I'm kidding.
Oh. Well, how many did you
have? I won't even go into that.
Oh, come on.
I was married before.
Just once?
Twice.
Just twice before?
One time I was 23, and I was, you know...
You were 23.
An actress trying to not be in a crazy world. So, so I married someone that I... knew from childhood, and we couldn't have been less suitable partners for one another. I think he's a lovely person, but sort of like, okay, what did we just do?
Yeah, that's amazing how many lovely people who are not suitable for you that are out there.
Yes, exactly. And fortunately, we didn't completely destroy each other. We were just like, oh, it was more like breaking up than getting divorced because we're 23. You know. When we got married, so I mean that's crazy. That's a little crazy.
Yeah.
And the next person I married was somebody that I married when I should have known better. No, I'm kidding. anyway, so then there was Jeremy, and I'm just gonna skip that one.
You're gonna skip that
for
one
for legal reasons.
All right. Well, I mean, I just saw him. My God, he is gorgeous.
Yeah, I know.
It's
crazy.
I mean. Like,
I know. I know.
He's such a like
Ecco homo. I know. He's like a man.
Yeah, but he's also like, but he's also not like, you
he's
know,
pretty.
He's pretty,
he's
but
so covered with hair right now with the mustache.
He is.
And
oh no, we saw
the
play last night.
Oh, you saw it last night?
Yeah. Oh, we drove up there.
How great!
Yeah,
he's
such a mensch.
He's so sweet. I know he's always playing bad guys, which
that's
so funny.
Well,
because
I mean, he has such a presence.
Yes,
like
he's got a great presence on stage too, and in the world. But and he is the nicest person and most dutiful person and the best possible.
Good.
It's the best
he's
person.
A good Jew. He's a good Jew.
He's a good Jew.
Yeah,
he's a good
Jew. Duty.
He doesn't think he's a good Jew because he doesn't think he's a good Jew. Like
that's
how good a Jew
key.
He is.
That's the
you know?
Key. That's the key. Yes.
Yeah. And his father is taking Yiddish classes at the JCC, you know, and then I'll say a few Yiddish words and he'll be like, "How come you know more Yiddish than my son?"
Oh yeah.
Like because I grew up in New York.
Yeah, of course. You know? It's like it's just part of English.
You say punim, you say
fe,
you say these words. And yeah. Cleo, are you feeling utzd? You know, like, and he's like, "What? What are you saying?" I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm the waspiest person ever saying these words because they're just part of my vocabulary.
Sure.
But yes, he's incredible. I'm very lucky. I know it every day. For two people who literally it's like having four kids is incredible, and we wanted it, and we did this to ourselves, as he always says, but it's also, you know, very stressful to have four beings be in your charge, and
it's
them so close in age.
It's stressful to have a, you know, one.
And one wonderful,
yeah.
By all accounts, perfect, your son,
oh,
David.
Sure,
he's perfect.
Sure, sure, sure.
Don't tell him I said that.
Yeah. I was, honestly, it was, the whole afternoon was just engineered to get him to go mushroom hunting again.
Oh.
Because he hasn't done it for me since he,
with me. Now
there's
photographic evidence.
I know.
You can prove it to,
His mom.
Oh.
And she was just so, like.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's good with little kids.
But even when you have good kids and happy kids and, thank God, healthy kids,
yeah.
And nobody's too extremely off the rails, and it's just like, even with all that, you're like, wow, two freelance people who are multi-hyphenate artists who are, you know, hustling. Side hustling in every direction to make enough to live on, and then also feel some sense of meaning and some sense of community and some sense of providing for your family. It's still with all that, like it puts tremendous pressure on a relationship. But even with all that, like we look at each other and we just are like, if ever there's a moment where we're just, or I should say, all the moments where we're like, oh, we just don't have enough time for each other. We don't have time to connect, like. Time for us, you know. We're just like, yeah, it's a phase of life. We're gonna miss this so bad in a few years, and just don't worry
what,
about
you
it.
You know what I really what I noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong.
But don't take it for granted.
What? Don't take it.
Don't worry about it, but don't take it for granted.
No, that's
you
a
know?
Tough balancing act.
Yeah.
But when you guys come, and play and sing with us, you know.
Yeah.
When you guys, like, just, like, singing together, finding somebody that you can sing with.
Yeah.
You know? I imagine it's similar acting with somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, that you're, when you guys do your, you know, duets or you sing together or stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's, like, that's, I just see that, like, that connection there is, like,
it's
super.
Sweet.
Like, you guys sing together. I'm like, oh, these guys, like.
We sing together only there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
we never, like, never at home, like, because it's always, like.
Sure.
If somebody's sitting down with a guitar.
Right.
The kids want to play what the kids want to play, and I'm usually, like, you know, spinning seven plates over there.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have a second, even in the company of friends,
especially
in the company of friends, to do that. It's funny, acting is such a funny thing, because you have to have a script, you have to be given the part, you have to be right for the part,
right.
Or you should be. and so it's always something you have to be given permission to do as an art. You don't stand in front of a mirror and do a monologue or work on something.
What do you mean by given permission to do?
Well, by someone who hires you.
Oh, okay.
You know, and you can write a play by yourself, you
right.
can paint a painting by yourself. You can write a screenplay by yourself. You can make, nowadays with the technology, you can do a lot of making your own content.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a radio program.
Such as
largely
it is,
by
as
yourself,
it is.
Largely. But acting is one of those team sports, you know?
Mm.
And so sort of all the conditions have to sort of line up so that you can do... Can you do something? And then sometimes you're lucky enough to do something that's truly special. Mostly it's luck, and those things don't happen all that often. So it is a little like lightning in a bottle as a career.
Sure.
And I'm finding more and more that it's turning to social media and to the world of you know, influencers tend to be given. Roles more than actors these days. It's like people who have a lot of hits or a lot of followers or there's a lot of sort of YouTube and Twitter sensations that are being utilized to secure financing for projects.
I did not know
that. Yeah, it's a whole new world out there.
Oh, that's right. We're in the 21st century.
Yes, we're in the 21st century. I would like to say oi right now. Oy vey. But it's...
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, does it change...
It doesn't change the theater.
No, well, theater is...
I mean, it might change Broadway, but Broadway isn't the sum total of the theater or even the pinnacle of the theater necessarily, because even Broadway it's so expensive to produce that, you know, everything's a little bit of a theme park ride, you know, or has to meet that standard and also be good. And the people who perform on Broadway are absolutely phenomenal and sensational, but the shows themselves, you can find really great theater now in regional theaters and around the world that it didn't used to feel that way. It used to feel like regional theaters were more performing the standards, you know, and then whatever was unique or new would come to Broadway or off Broadway. And now it's somewhat different, but at least, you know, that, like, if you think of Williamstown Film Theater Festival, they're doing all new works now.
Oh, wow.
And that's pretty exciting to think that maybe the sort of regional theaters and you know, the idea of is similar to some of the work that I'm doing with Stockade Works in Kingston. The idea of making local work in various ways, that sort of decentralizing from New York City or Los Angeles.
And do you think that's an offshoot of sort of this new age of media that we're in?
I think it is the new age of media. I think it's economics as well. Sure.
New York is impossibly expensive now.
Yeah, but the fact that, there's this possibility that technology changing, that people can, produce a movie for less money in some respects, or they could produce a play in a different place and possibly reach an audience using social media or using these different ways of reaching people or different ways of getting an audience or different ways of pulling people together. And, you know, when you think of even talk about, you know, the technology of something like... Good job.
Aoife, come here. Hey.
When you think of technology, even like just, you know, Lyft and Uber up here, you just go, whoa, it's the country. And people have ways of utilizing technology in such a way that they can take themselves sort of off grid and stay on grid. And I don't know how I feel about it in general, but I think it's interesting. Yeah.
Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in movies. It doesn't matter who you are. There are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom because she wanted to be alone. All the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you've hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. Was still have style, and if
suffered in vain.
Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in showbiz. It doesn't matter who you are. And those who are successful, be always on your guard. Success walks hand in hand with failure along Hollywood Boulevard.
But I get very upset when I see people going into restaurants with iPads with their kids, like without even letting them try to have a conversation or look up and at the person who's kind enough to serve them their meal and...
Or have a conversation.
Have a conversation, of course, at the table. Yeah. That was a huge part of growing up.
Is it? Yeah.
In our house, even when my mom was in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Okay, yeah.
She starred in that show. My dad wrote and directed it, or co-wrote it and directed it on Broadway. And so even with that, dinner was on the table at 6.
Mm-hmm.
She had to leave for the theater at 7.
Did your mom cook dinner?
We had, during that period, we had Gladys, who my mother adored, and we all adored. She was, you know, worked for our family for a number of years, but during that period of time would also prepare a dinner.
Sure.
Because my mom, there was no way. And I wish I had a Gladys in my life, but I don't. But glad my mom was even during that period of time. That was in the 70s. Was interviewed by Ms. Magazine as a woman who had it all.
Right.
And my mom said, "No, what you have to understand is you can't have it all without Gladys. You can't. Like you just can't.
Yeah.
Or even if your partner is Gladys, whoever.
Sure.
There needs to be. You know, I cannot do it all without help. And they cut all that part out.
No way, really.
Of the interview. And it really incensed her. But she thought, what kind of feminist would I be if I didn't honor this woman who is my other half in this domestic partnership? Like, she's married to a man, but this woman is helping her do everything. And she wanted to acknowledge her contribution, you know?
What'd they say? Did they?
And
they
were like, oh, well, our readers want to...
They want the fantasy.
Yeah.
Which is dangerous.
It's dangerous.
That's
look at us now. Look at where we are now. We're back at this sort of third wave where there was this place in between, maybe in the 80s, where women were either trying to be more masculine in the workplace or, say, be more, you know, hide the aspects of themselves that they might think look soft or delay childbearing or, you know, not have a family, and not just by choice, but because they were afraid of looking weak or looking domestic or whatever. And some people chose what they chose and that was their choice and that's fine. But if people were choosing it for some reason, because it didn't seem like you could do both, that's kind of sad. And the other piece of it, I think, that I saw, it was a huge trend in the 80s in our business anyway, of women just cutting each other down.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Competing, women executives in Hollywood, really more sexist than the men in many respects about, is she someone you could take to bed? Or not, like, they would. There's an expression that begins with the word F and it ends in a bull.
Fungible.
Fungible.
Yes.
Is she fungible? And it was like there was this very crass sort of cliche female executive that was trying to prove that she could hang with the boys, you know? And it was like, it was kind of sad to see... that kind of behavior and being sort of around during that time, just sort of watching it and going, why are people, you know, and watching people try to out tough each other and out man each other, if you will, and no matter whether you were male or female, and sort of like it's just, I don't know, missed opportunity. So now I was at the Tribeca Film Festival a couple years ago. There's this terrific luncheon that Jane Rosenthal in and Paula Weinstein throw every year this Chanel Luncheon, which is sponsored by Chanel, and it's all about women in film, and they're really, really good about promoting women in film. Genuinely, it's not a sort of surface kind of commitment. They have all kinds of grants and programs, and in any case, they just would talk about every year how, you know, women really need to be there for each other and need to mentor women who are younger than them, who are coming up, and not be threatened by each other. And I'm starting to see more of that now, and which is so great.
Since sort of Weinstein and the, this, that there has been a clearing, or that there's now more room in the Hollywood ecosystem for other voices.
I think this is a moment where it needs to be capitalized on, and also, like, when people kick around the word diversity, you have to prove that you're walking your talk, and so it is important that we not say, okay, we did that and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, were we post-racial after Obama? Oh, no, we were not.
No, we were
just getting started. We were just exposing, ripping the Band-Aid and the scab off and going, wow, it's really bad. Mm-hmm. It's worse than my whiteness, we ripped the Band-Aid off of
the arm, but apparently the leg has been hemorrhaging for
a while. There are no legs. Yeah. To stand on. So, yeah, we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go, but at least we're looking at it, I think. Just this whole Me Too thing. Every single person that I know who's female and in our business would easily be able to say Me Too, because our business is that way. It's the culture. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's always been that way.
That was just sort of part of the price that you had to pay.
It's just part of it. It's part of being around it.
Or being a woman. I mean, that's,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's sort of the...
Unfortunately. I mean, and yet then there's this... To me, I think there is a difference between harassment and rape. And there's a spectrum of behavior. One, you should go to jail. And one, you should have professional consequences for. And civil sort of consequences for, and but everybody talking about who they dated and if they were, like, good to them or not, and when they were sort of trying their best,
right.
We should be still be able to fumble through making a pass at someone that isn't working for you,
right?
Without, you know what I'm saying? There's just got to be
right.
a way to discuss things without everything being.
I think that's what the fragile white man is really freaking out about now. It's like, well, I mean, how am I going to... How am I ever going to date anybody? Well, yeah. So, I
yes.
don't know. I think
going back
run,
to the 50s in Brooklyn, or wherever, like, you know, in the 50s, like,
yeah.
You didn't... There was a code of behavior for men with women or people who were, let's say, going on a date.
Right.
Or working together in the workplace. You would dress a certain way in the workplace so as not to be openly... You would not dress the same way at work as you would... I mean, women would have to wear lipstick and a girdle and a thing
and heels
and do their hair, and it was exhausting, I'm sure. But still there was a professional code of behavior. You were not supposed to... I mean, we're talking... I know that Mad Men did what they did and people did what they did. And people had affairs with their coworkers all the time and always will. But there was, when you went on a date with someone, you were supposed to behave a certain way.
Right.
Right?
There was a protocol.
There was a protocol on your first date, and you don't do this and you don't do that. And if you do that, you're a bad girl. If you do that, you're too forward or whatever. There were ways that people knew there was certain conduct that was always. And so post, like, Women's Lib,
right?
Here you have this whole gender that doesn't know how to behave.
Men?
Yes.
Oh.
Like, what are you supposed to do? Okay,
right.
Does that mean anything goes? Does it mean I don't open the door anymore? Do I have manners?
Right.
Am I a beast?
Right.
Am
right,
I,
right.
do I, when do I, when do, when
no,
do I stop?
It's so
oh,
easy.
When they say no.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so, but I don't think that there is a new code written. I don't think people know what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I feel like I a lot of moms with boys are like, I don't know how to help my son know how to behave and what's correct.
What I find myself thinking about.
If somebody says no, don't touch them.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it exactly. But then
that's obvious.
I think there's also the fear.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, I'm just not going to deal with any of this.
Right.
You know, if you're coming of age now,
yeah,
you know,
scary.
Sexually, if you're, you know, coming of age sexually, and you're a boy, you know, and you are, you know, inculcated with these new ways of looking at things, it could be overwhelming. And I'm not in any way defending the old school because it was oppressive. But I've seen a lot of kids just go, you know what? I'm just not going to deal with this, right?
Yeah.
And the fear, you know, it's like it's like the, you know, the DARE program in school for sex.
Right.
Is like, we're just going to scare them off of drugs, you know?
Right.
Well, that doesn't work.
No.
You know, I mean, maybe a little bit for some kids, but at the end of the day, if you tell kids, you know, if you smoke marijuana, you know, the next thing is going to be, you're going to be like shooting smack in the alley, you know?
Right.
And then the kids like try the marijuana and they go, oh, you know what? This is not, I don't feel like shooting smack in the alley. So then they assume that everything else from that is not true,
right.
When actually much of it probably is. But then the same thing with, I think we're doing DARE now with sex in a lot of ways. And that, like, just the fear of, like, you know, and post-AIDS as well. I mean,
it's scary.
That, you know, is like, if you can have sex and be careful, but, you know, it's great and it's good and enjoy it, you know, and as a parent talking to, a young man who is getting ready to go off to college in a year and is awesome. It's the most awkward conversation you're going to have with your kids. You guys are going to have fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you got three, you got four. You got four of those conversations.
We only broached the, what sex is once so far. And it was like, no, you don't. I'm like, well... Someday we'll have the conversation later.
Are you guys gonna break it up? Are you gonna do Cleo?
Oh, we're not
Cleo,
gonna do team sex ed.
You know,
Cleo's in a different room because she's people already at the age of seven and four, five.
They're sexual beings. Do you want to talk a little bit about the Stockade Works and?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a project it's been years in the making, and you guys are doing something truly unique and imaginative.
Thank you.
Why don't you explain what Stockade Works is?
Well, when we moved here 5 years ago, it was because I, had just had our fourth child and was like, we can't hack it in the city. We had been in the Hudson Valley for since 2006. So 10 years prior, or I'm sorry, six, 7 years prior to that. But we decided to just be up here full time.
Is that right? 2006 was 10 years, over 10 years ago.
12 years ago. I know.
I'm going to have to check that. I don't think you're right about that.
I check your facts. Check your facts on that. I don't know. My math is also slipping. I'll ask Phineas. But we moved up here, and we knew that it was beautiful. We knew that it was going to be a nature-based kind of environment for, to grow vegetables and children in, and that it would be somewhat more affordable than Brooklyn, and also just sustainable in terms of our mental health. But we were assuming we would be commuting to work. And whenever we could get it. But we also knew that we would have to one at a time it or figure it out because four kids, you need at least two adults present at all times until they're a certain age because we had all our kids 3.5 years apart, within 3.5 years. There's a lot of people under the age of four in one house. And so we survived that period. And during that time, I was asked to do a TV show in Vancouver.
Ah, what show?
And it was something... it's called Agent X, and the producers were terrific, and I was like, but I can't really do this in Vancouver. I just moved here, and what about Kingston? And they're like, well, huh? And there were, where's Kingston? And like, okay, we've got some work to do. Obviously, this, since, you know, the Woodstock Film Festival has been in existence a long time, and they brought a lot of attention to the Hudson Valley, but more as an sort of aggregator of cinema, arts, and independent film and art house cinema, and not so much as sort of the TV factory, you mm-hmm. know, of like an LA or a New York or Vancouver or Toronto or now Georgia, lots of Georgia, huh. Atlanta, and all of the state of Georgia. So I did not do that, and I started thinking, well, why hasn't this happened up here, you know, and looked around, and I realized there were a few hurdles, and one of them was that we were in the same, we shared in the same percentage as New York City in this wonderful tax credit that is in the state of New York since 2008.
Mm-hmm. For film.
Am I wrong about the date? 2008. Yeah. And for film and television production. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, got to work with the local politicians and stuff. Like, how can we get a bump, 10% extra for being outside of the city and mm-hmm. at this distance and make it attractive to business? And so, you know, so suddenly I get pulled into all of that. And we won that. And that was passed a law 2016 in November. And it's now 40%, and there's been a 300% increase in production since then, which is great, largely independent film.
Sure.
And so my whole thought with Stockade Works was, okay, we're going to try to increase film and television production, but the way to do it is to build up the crew base and train the local people to be available to incoming film and television production. And to do that in a way where they wouldn't just be hobbyists coming onto an indie film that was in sort of a non-union low-budget film and being paid basically minimum wage or less because they get around it,
mm-hmm.
And somewhat being exploited, but having a good time
sure.
being exploited, you can't sustain yourself on that. That's not going to help the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I got suddenly very passionate about economic development and mm-hmm. workforce development and working with all of the different programs and the Regional Economic Development Council, and founded a nonprofit called Stockade Works that's dedicated to bringing film and television here and technology, but creating a workforce that's ready to meet that demand.
Wow.
And ultimately putting them on a track to joining trade unions, because mm-hmm. the bigger productions always are signatories to these trade unions. And by doing so, giving themselves an opportunity to have benefits, pensions, you know, welfare covered, and make more money and be able to live on it. And because after IBM left,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think in the aggregate, something like, by some estimates, 31,000 jobs were lost
yeah.
in this area. And so what manufacturing is going to come back?
Right.
You know, what's going to come back? So there was some
coal.
So, you know, coal, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Clean, quote, clean coal. So, you know, at one point there were, people were looking at Legoland or whatever.
Oh,
you know, there's been efforts,
I know.
You know.
It's just like as tourists, like, just chasing the tourist dollars. No,
so
this
it's like,
is,
oh, no, tourism
is
doing
industry.
Well,
this is,
but this is industry, and it's light manufacturing as a
yeah.
classification. So if we could, you know, make our facilities up to the standard that would be attractive to larger productions,
mm-hmm.
not just the indies that want to come for a couple of days, but the ones that are going to be there for years.
Right.
And if we could train the workforce, and while doing all of that, do it in a way that's sustainable environmentally,
mm-hmm.
and then also really create greater diversity and access and inclusion and equity on the set by just sort of who we recruit to be part of these programs and who we're training and where we're training them. And
and you're working with BOCES?
So we're working a bit with BOCES, a bit with the community colleges, a bit with the SUNY schools.
Mm-hmm.
We are about to form a community council. We're hoping to get this going very soon. to get some of the local leaders in Midtown Kingston in particular to give us real insight into, you know, what that community wants, what it fears, what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, I'm a white girl from ultimately the Upper West Side. And, you know, I want to make sure that I know, that it's not just enough to say I'm opening the door. You can come in.
Right.
And it's free.
Right.
It's important to make sure that there's, you know, somebody that from within that community already doing the good work that, you know, Center for Creative Education is doing, or TMI is doing, or Rise of Kingston. These organizations that have been there and are there now trying to ensure that gentrification doesn't crush people,
right.
And that
we don't just
say we're diverse, but we have an open door policy, but actually figuring out a way to reach into the community and say, I'm not going to exploit you by getting this cheap labor out of you, which is a sort of horrible Hollywood colonial history of going to places and exploiting cheap labor and then leaving. I'm trying to be on the side of, we're trying to train you and provide you with a job, mentor you, provide you with connections, and be here for you on an ongoing basis so that, yeah, we're referring those people we train to productions that come to town, but we're also there with that person who stays in town to say, are we meeting your needs? Is this business meeting your needs? What do you need? How's it going? And so forth. So that it's not just a one and done program. It's not a PA training program and then you're in the system,
right.
And you're fend for yourself. We have a system of a bunch of workshops,
okay.
And we also have a boot camp program. So the boot camp program is for crew, and we have only done one. We have now a grant for our second one, and we are looking for the right film to do that that boot camp for. But the one that we did last summer, we had 140 applicants. We did it with very quick turnaround for a film that was going to be shooting here in July. So we quickly sent out a newsletter to the people on our newsletter. There's 800 people were signed up to our newsletter, and we did whatever outreach we could as with a quick turnaround. 140 applicants, and we ended up having 23 that were part of our boot camp. More than 50% were women. People were from diverse backgrounds, different ages. Though we want to do better, you know.
Okay, sure.
But it was great.
And these
it was a great program.
They were hired. And
they actually did a film. So within a month,
right?
They got hands-on training. They worked directly with keys in each department, and then they were selected by one department. They could say what they wanted, and then the department head could say what they wanted.
Okay.
And then we did the best we could to match people with what they wanted and what they were suited to. And they worked for 15 days on the film and subsequently went on to work on many other films. So it's worked really well so far. We also know from filmmakers who come to us and ask for, hey, what's it like shooting there? Can you help us out? And basically offering, in essence, free production services by helping give people, oh, go over there, call that guy. You know,
this
woman is terrific. Or pointing them to resources and to our trainees, but also identifying where we have gaps in our crew base. So we just did a sound workshop, for example.
Seth was there.
Yeah, Seth was there, and he was great. So we ended up with like 16 people that were at the end of a 3-day workshop ready for referral because they were already... they had very, you know, top-notch trainers that came up from the city and worked pro bono.
Wow.
And that was exciting. So we go, okay, well, where are the gaps? How can we fill the gaps just to make us sort of professionally ready for prime time? And then on the other side, trying to make sure we sort of kind of walk the line of all these different rubrics, you know, of... are
sorry, rubric gives me chills.
I know, like the
as a teacher.
Well, it's challenging to juggle it all, right? We want to make sure that we're not, you know, we're not. we're doing with some sort of blend between, you know, hoping that we get we promote the diversity and the access and the inclusion and whatnot, and we also don't discriminate against the white males who want an opportunity and are out of work and would like an opportunity to work. So you know, we're finding the balance.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting and being on that side of things. So that's the nonprofit.
That's the nonprofit.
And that's since 2016. So it's finally getting its legs. And
if somebody was interested in finding more about,
we have a website.
You have a
stockadeworks.org.
Stockadeworks.org.
Yeah, and it's spelled
website.
Like the actual Webster's, W-O-R-K-S, not like W-E-R-X or something, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Works, that's W-O-R-K-S, Stockadeworks. And it's not A-I-D. That's another one.
Oh, right.
We're not.
But so it's like
the Stockade District, Uptown Kingston. So that's Stockadeworks. And then, you know, we're also, I also recently started a production company so that I can get back to my own writing, directing, producing.
Oh, wonderful.
Side of things. And that's called Quality Pictures.
Quality Pictures.
And that's qualitypictures.co. But we're very, very nascent. We have a bunch of projects that are written and are being pitched. And so hopefully we'll bring those are all going to shoot in the Hudson Valley.
I could hear the new Quality Pictures.
Quality Pictures. And the funny reason for that is, and it's very much, it's very, very old school. But the reason for the name is, it's a lot to live up to. But the idea being that we're also looking at how we do production. So that these are quality jobs. We are actually, and Stockade Works is, with Stockade Works, we're going to be doing a white paper that we're raising grant money for. But the idea being looking at how our industry does production and the study is called Doing Production Differently. So the idea is we look at how the whole industry, maybe the barriers to entry for women or people who want to have families, is that the average week is 75 hours at work. And it's not sustainable. And so people, when they do have families, they drop like flies. People divorce. People, mm-hmm. You know, you can't, you even if you're working all the time, which is awesome, it's insanity to work those kinds of hours for 9 to 10 months a year.
Mm.
So we're looking at, there's something called French hours, which is you work straight 8. So you have little walking snack meals, substantial snack meals, but you don't stop for an hour for lunch. You don't have people arrive at work before call and get breakfast. You arrive having had, they call it, breakfast. You begin work and you finish.
They call it breakfast.
They call it having had.
Having had. Oh.
Arrive having had.
Yes.
Is code for you arrive having had breakfast.
Yes.
And you arrive at work and you work straight through and then you have meals, a meal at the end of the day.
Mm.
And so it's civilized. It's so French. It's like they put wine on the table and people eat and they go home and they have time to